great car. Or a smart car, whatever. Does she have a preference?
She's driving. Well, right now she's learning to drive on my wife's Honda Pilot.
Okay, that's a great car.
She's probably going to inherit a Pilot because
it's
getting time for Elda to upgrade her vehicle.
All right, sounds like a plan. Anyway, good chatting with you. I know you've got a meeting plan, but Brett's got a meeting plan, and I'm just here to sing a few songs, do a couple of soft shoes, whatever's necessary. I just saw Greg, so he might be starting right now.
Yeah, there he is. Still got 3 minutes here.
3 minutes?
People are showing up.
Yes, they are, because they want to see your beautiful haircut.
That's right. Grow my eyebrows.
I hear you. Do you have to pay the same as I do when you get your haircut?
Well, I'm very innovative, Jerry. I do it myself. It doesn't take long.
No, I can imagine. Yeah, I had the same guy. My goodness, he used to be at near our old offices on here, Ontario, and Dundas. And I don't know how many years ago that is, but when we first opened up, I started going to him. And I've stayed with him ever since. I've always said, I don't know how good you are, but you're convenient. So no, he's a good guy. You go back a long. Everybody speaks Italian in the shop but me. But we get along fine because he speaks English. Well, not great, but good. So it's all good. All positive. I think he speaks good English. I understand him anyway.
Yeah. My barber, I asked him for a discount. As I got less hair to cut, he says, I'm glad you brought up the conversation. He goes, I was considering to charge you more because it takes me longer to find it.
Good line. It's a good response. Absolutely. Absolutely. I go back when haircuts were 50 cents a haircut.
Yeah, I think they're about 40 bucks now.
No, they're not that expensive. Uh-huh.
No?
No. Well, unless
you're a woman, I think. Maybe a woman.
Well, you know, it's a long period of time. I like to get in and out. I mean, I don't like to sit there, but I think he charges me $25 or $30. I can't remember which one it is. But it works out fine. He's a good guy, and we solve all the world's problems, so when I leave, the world is completely, all problems in the world are solved for about 3 seconds. Then things go back to normal. Anyway, I don't know, Greg, is it, you got...
Yeah, it's that time, John. I know you got a good meeting planned this morning, so the floor is yours.
All right, well, we're going to talk about testimonials, third-party stories, which we refer to as emotional stories, and they're one of the most effective tools in our arsenal. You know, we always say logic makes sense, but emotion makes the sale. And new agents usually try to convince the prospect with logic, but the emotional story or testimonial creates the need and urgency to do it now through the power of identification and transference. What we got to do is we have to use that emotional story to paint the picture. You know, it has to be similar age, occupation, family situation. The prospect must identify with the testimonial and then transfer the emotion to themselves. Emotion makes the intangible tangible. Emotion creates the urgency to act. As we always say, logic makes people think. Emotion makes people act. And what we're going to discuss today and get everybody to maybe shift a little bit, because it's winter's here. I mean, it's snowing right now outside my door. And shifting your testimonials to the seasonal testimonials. You know, a summer story doesn't make sense in the winter. So what we want to do today is take some time and talk about different testimonials, different third-party stories to help people at this time of year to make that decision. And Jerry, I'd like you to maybe just expand a little bit on logic makes sense, emotion makes the sale before we get into the testimonial.
It's a very interesting subject because most people have difficulty understanding it, including when I first started I didn't quite understand why or the power of the third-party story, but what it's called, and you used the word transference. When people hear an emotional story, it's like seeing an emotional movie. We're moved because we're humans, the human emotion. And what happens is we transfer that feeling into action. I want to do something about this, or I need to do something about this. Even when you watch the ads on TV, they're based on emotion, action, to do something, to solve the problem. So when we tell our story, a third-party story of what happened to Bob or Susan or John or Mary, and you know that story or you know of that story, what happens is that person realizes that if they were in the same or similar situation with a spouse and 2, 3, or 4 children, with a business that everything he or she has is tied up in that business, then every time they make money, it's based on their ability to work, and if they couldn't work, they would be in deep, serious trouble, pretty much like the people you're telling about. And they're moved to action, because remember, we're the only company in the country of Canada that serves the self-employed middle to high risk. We're the only company in Canada that serves on a lifetime basis for many people. They can get benefits for the rest of their lives. I think we're one of the few, if not the only company, I could be wrong on this, but of the few that allows the family doctor to make the final decision. You don't have to go to some doctor you never heard of, like WSIB. I think we're one of the few companies, if not the only company, that says our benefits are non-integrated or non-prorated. Now, those are technical words. They don't mean a great deal to the prospect until something happens and he finds out he's going to get or she's going to get a check. So it's understanding when you tell an emotional story, it's trying to get these people to understand emotionally if that same or similar situation happened to them, what would you do? You know, I've always said that the cemeteries are filled with first-timers. And many times if you walk down the hospital and you see a ward or you see 2 or 3 people in a room or you see a private room and you walk by, many people are staring at the TV, but they don't see the TV. They're worried sick. How am I going to pay and take care of my family, male or female? So that's why telling a third-party story gets people to be moved emotionally and realize if that same or similar situation happened to them, John, or ladies and gentlemen, what in heaven's name would they do? There's no federal, there's no provincial, because they've got assets, and God forbid he has to sell them, he's going to sell them at 10 cents on the dollar, she's going to sell them at 10 cents on the dollar. We all know that. People go to auctions not to pay more money, they go to auctions to get a really terrific buy. And that's why it's so incredibly important about the thousands upon thousands of men and women that we service, that we see, upon the many thousands of people that we do business with. It's so incredibly important that when a person doesn't apply, they just haven't been moved emotionally. And that third-party story really brings it to home, to today, to this moment. And I believe we're the only company, I'll stand corrected on this if I'm in error, but so for many years we were the only company. The day he or she applies, their medical records are frozen. And if they could have qualified for this program in the next 3, 4, 5 weeks that it takes to be approved by the doctor and the MIB, the Medical Inspection Bureau, and something happened to them during that period of time, the date of their approval, John, what happens? It's back to what?
The day of their approval is they're covered.
The day they apply.
That's right.
So, as of June. I don't know anybody that does this. I really don't. Now, there may be a few, but I've never seen one, and no one's ever told me they've seen one. Now, maybe there is one out there. We are so unique in the industry, and that's been why we've been so proud and so incredibly determined to be not just the biggest, but the best. I've always liked best better than biggest. I think best says it all. Best, biggest is, it's a different word. It's a magnanimous word, but it's a different word. I like being the best. I like being able to walk away when you service a client and you've done business with him or her, and knowing you've done them one incredible favor, because something is going to happen. God willing, it's a small thing, but nobody knows. Nobody knows. We have so many people, so many lifetime claims, so many people 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, so many people that were, everything was fine, and then all of a sudden the world turned upside down in a nanosecond, and their whole world became the edge of their bed, and their biggest sick to their stomach feeling is, how am I going to take care of my family? My God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And my friends, there isn't anything he or she can really do except starting to sell their assets, their equipment, their machinery, their land, their buildings, until that's gone. Back to you, John.
Oh, thanks, Trey, and always great comments. First of all, we're going to just take a minute and go over the mechanics of the emotional story. You know, we use the GIFT acronym for it, but first of all, when we tell a story, we lay the groundwork. We include the details about age, marital status, family, occupation, did they have coverage or not. Any important facts should be told down. And this is the time to dispense anything that's more logical than emotion. Then we tell about the incident. We paint the picture of the incident occurring which causes the disability. People think in pictures, not in words. So we want to communicate visually. The more animated, the better. There's no humor. This is a very serious part of the story. You know, at this point, we talk about hearing the glass break and smelling the blood. We're painting that picture. Then there's the follow-up. What is the follow-up to the story? What's the long-term effects of the incident? How was the family affected in the long run? Did the prospect have or the client have coverage, or did they not have coverage? And, you know, really paint the picture of, you know, so many times we hear clients telling us about how they were disabled and there was no food in the fridge. And then the last thing is transfer that emotion. Transfer the emotion to the prospect. You know, if that happened to you, how would you make that feel? How would your family feel? Would you rather be, you know, somebody that had coverage or somebody that didn't have coverage? So again, the tools of our trade is logic makes sense, emotion makes the sale. Not logic makes the sale, and new people, especially new people, make that mistake. I'm going to go to Joel Bunch. Joel, I'd like you to share a story with us that really, really is a seasonal story, because we're running into that season where it's slip and fall. People are injured all the time. Just quick, their feet slip right out from underneath them, and they fall on, you know, they herniated disc, they break a bone. It happens just in a second. Mr. Bunch.
Okay. I'm going to tell my favorite winter story, one that's actually someone who's not too far from where I live now. So a gentleman of mine was working along near a place called Mossley, and he met this gentleman, or he stopped in this farm, and we pulled in. There wasn't too much going on, but some kids came up, and he said, "Excuse me, I'm looking to speak to the person." And off they went. Please, guys.
Well, we lost it for a sec there. Can you repeat that again? Sorry, just the last couple lines.
Yeah, so we pulled into this farm and saw some kids, and the kids, and he said, "I'm looking for the person that runs the farm." And the person said, "Okay." The kid said, "Yeah, my dad's just back at the bush, so I'm gonna go get him." And off he went on the ATV, and John's kind of standing there going, "Okay." Anyways, sure enough, the father comes back out of the bush on the ATV and pulls up beside him, and
we're losing Joel again. Sorry, Joel.
Sure.
You seem to be coming in and out, but I hear you again, so we'll give it one last try, and then I can go on with the story if it doesn't work. Go ahead.
And it now, is anybody else hearing the same issue, or this could also be
just me?
I'm hearing the same issue.
Okay. All right. Sure. Is this any better?
Yes, it is.
I'm wondering. wonder if it could be my Wi-Fi. I just turned it off. So, okay. I'm not sure where I'm. Where should I start back again at?
I'm talking about the back of the bush.
Okay. Apologies for that. So this gentleman, so the gentleman comes out of the bush with on his ATV, and says, "Yeah, go ahead and explain it to me on the hay wagon here." And so John starts to explain, "Well, I'm with the Personal Compensation Division of Landmark Canada. I work with self-employed about it, basically explaining about an accident program." And as soon as he starts explaining that, the gentleman goes, whoa, where were you back in January? You're 6 months too late. Well, what happened? And he said, well, my wife went into Ingersoll to get the plates renewed on the pickup truck. And she called me up and she said, hey, honey, I forgot to get the odometer reading on the other pickup. Could you go grab that done for me? Oh, sure, no problem. So he goes out to the barn where he parked it. And jumps in the truck and gets her the odometer reading. And what he didn't realize is there was a drip coming off the eaves trough. And it created this little mound of wet ice that's the slipperiest thing in the world. And so he gets out of the truck, steps with one foot and plants it in the ground, turns and steps. And when he stepped, he landed on with his right foot on that patch of ice, and out that foot goes out from underneath him. And he went straight down. The only problem was his other leg was still planted and didn't move. So when he went down, he broke his left leg. The only problem was he didn't break it crosswise like most normal people do. He broke it the length of the femur, or the length of the bone. And so it's almost like splitting a 2x4 in half, or the length was. So they rushed him off to the hospital, put pins and screws in there, and said, you've got to take a whole bunch of time off and stay off it. You have to heal. And he said, okay, no problem. Well, I have some insurance. So he put some insurance in, but what he didn't realize is the insurance that he had wasn't actually designed for self-employed people. And he got a lump sum check of $500 total. And that was it. And he said, well, this isn't going to, you know, hire someone to, you know, be a relief milker. This isn't going to hire someone to do all my work and chores, and I have to get back out there. So he forced himself to limp on, walk around and feed and milk the cows and everything on this leg. And because he did that, unfortunately, the blood clots that should have absorbed back into the body, they all let loose and went through his bloodstream and then came up and hit his lung. And they had to do what's called, it's called a pulmonary embolization. They literally have to go in there and cauterize part of the lungs to save him. Because if they had kept on going through, they would go up to his brain and give him a brain aneurysm. And that one injury, because of the blood clots, cost him almost 4 years of work. And he ended up, he wasn't a huge operation, so he ended up having to sell the quota, sell the cows. And if you know anything about a quota, once you've lost that, it's extremely hard that he'll probably never get that again. And he went from being this, you know, active farm, things are going great, to losing basically everything. And after 4 years, he's now basically installing fences as a living. And he said, yeah, where were you 6 months ago? This would have made a big difference for me and my family. And his wife, I remember, she was working multiple jobs just to make ends meet. I think she was working three jobs all said and done, just trying to make ends meet. Because unfortunately, he had no coverage. And you can see how important having a $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 check coming in every single month would have made to that family. Because they could use that to hire someone to do the work so he didn't have to go out there and, you know, on a messed up leg. And I apologize for my voice again. My voice has not come back yet, but claims, when you talk about winter claims, the thing I love about winter is the fact that there's so many people who say, oh yeah, well, I don't do that type of injury, or I don't do that type of hazardous work. But when you and say you're sitting with a prospect at the kitchen table, or you're standing out in the back of the pickup truck and you point at the driveway and say, slipped out a patch of ice, and you point at the ice outside. Nobody can argue, because if you live in Canada, you have wiped out and hit your butt, or your elbow, or the back of your head, more times than you can count in your life, unless you just don't leave the house, ever. It is something where it removes the ability for people to say, oh, I would never do that. That would never happen to me. And so I really love that. But telling an emotional story about someone who got hurt while on the beach in Florida isn't quite the same as telling a story about someone who wiped out on a patch of ice that you can point to outside. So it makes a big difference. I'll throw it back to you, John. I do believe you're muted there, John. I can't hear you.
A lot of technical difficulties this morning. Sorry about that. I want to go to Amy. Amy, I know you're going to an appointment. Do you have a minute to tell your contractor story? You're on.
Hi, John.
There you are, John.
Yeah.
Thanks, Amy. Do you have a sec?
I do. So I'll be very focused. I'm in the middle of some heavy traffic, but I met Jason. He's a framer, met him on a huge job site in Brantford last October, and he's 54 years of age. He's worked his whole entire life. He's been farming and framing and working hard, and he's not married, and he told me that he supports his 81-year-old mother on the farm, and he lives there. So for him, he decided that would fit his budget an emergency benefit. And it was a $2,000 benefit, so we put that together in late October. And I came back to that same job site. I was actually with you, John. You were helping me that day. And we went back there. It was in February. And I came up to the site, and I saw his old truck sitting there. I definitely saw the truck. And I looked up there on the second floor where they're all framing, and I thought, oh, those, like, where's Jason? Like, that's not his son-in-law up there, and it's definitely not Jason. There's two older men up there framing away, working hard. So I called up, and I said, hey, where's Jason? And the one came down the ladder, and he said, oh, Jason, oh, no, he's not here. Last week, he fell, and he broke his ankle. And I thought, oh, dear, like, I hadn't heard from him. So I got back in the truck with John, and I said, John, like, Jason, like, he's a client of mine. He broke his ankle. I got to call him right now. So I called him, and he answered the phone. And I said, Jason, your brothers tell me you fell and you broke your ankle. I haven't heard from you. So I'm calling because you're protected with your accident program. He's like, oh, Amy. He's like, oh, thank you for calling. I was going to call you. He said, I didn't break my ankle. I said, well, what happened? He says, well, you know, we cleared off all the snow. It was big, heavy snowfall, cleared off all the snow. And I was working on the, just had the ladder up just at the garage. I was working on the top of the garage. And as I was coming down the ladder, I almost was at the ground, but my foot slipped on the ladder was wet. And I slipped on the third rung and came down on my right heel and felt excruciating pain and got to emergency. My son-in-law that he's working with took him to emergency, and they x-rayed, and he had chipped a bone in his heel. He says, Amy, this is so painful. I can't do anything. My foot's in a boot. They're telling me it's going to be at least 2 months, and I can't even do my farming now. I'm sitting here. I'm so like, oh, he was so distraught and upset. And I said, Jason, do you have a printer? So then we started off the claim form, and sure enough, he went to the chiropractor and had the claim, and he got paid, I believe it was about a week and a half, because it took him a while to get everything organized with every box filled. But he got paid $2,000, and it was for 2 months that he got it, and then he was on the partial, and then he was back to work. So I'll throw it back to you.
Well, thanks, Amy. And again, that's a great seasonal story because it happened so fast. And you laid the groundwork. You painted the picture of the incident. the follow-up of the story, he got paid. He was paid within 7 days. He was laid up for a couple months. And again, sometimes when you're telling the story to a client, then you're going to transfer that emotion. How would that make you feel? Can you see yourself if that happened to you? How would that affect your family? So, and that's just a short little story. But the Paul Ward story that Joel told is a long-term story. Yeah. Paul Ward is an individual that was laid up for over 4 years with that injury because of all the things, that all the repercussions of his injury. So I'd like to go to Jack. Jack, if you would be so kind as to share a seasonal emotional story, because I know you you talk to a lot of people and you're seeing all kinds of constant.
Jack. Sure. So, you know, being back working around the Niagara region, it actually kind of reminded me of a lady that I met early in my career, and I don't know if I ever actually shared this, because it was very much like a zero story. I approached a business, and there was the store manager who was in, and they said, before you talk to the owner, you need to show this to me, see if it's worthwhile, and I knew that, you know, being in a leadership position in the company, I could easily potentially write her, so I decided to present. And went over everything and got to a point where, you know, it was a point of close. And she kept saying how she didn't need it. Her job was safe. She just worked in the office. This is something for the boss. She liked the idea of it. It seemed like a good program. But for her, she didn't want it. But for the boss, it was definitely something that he should have. So I end up coming back. I write the owner, and I come to deliver his policy. And I realize that the lady isn't there. Her name was Christine. Now, Christine wasn't much older than me. She was probably 27, but had worked her way up and had her own place, had all these responsibilities as she was engaged, was looking to start a family. And I asked the owner, and I'm struggling to remember his name right now, but I asked him, I was like, hey, what happened to Christine? And he was just like, oh, no, she had a pretty bad accident. So I was like, oh, do you know what happened? He's like, that's not for me to share. If she ever gets back to work, then we could always you could always ask her. So time goes on, and I end up working in the St. Catharines area. And about a year later, I go to this small cleaning chemical company, like Made Natural Holistic Chemicals, and I walk in, and Christine was working in that store. And I look, I was like, hey, you're Christine, right? Do you remember me? And she looks at me, she's like, I'm never going to forget you. And I ask, your boss mentioned that you had had an accident. Do you mind telling me what happened? And she was like, well, when we met last time, it was in the winter, and she ended up having this girls' weekend booked with her friends to go up to the Muskokas. They had rented this winter cottage, and they were going to skate, have fun, and they were all sitting in the hot tub at this cottage when an icicle that was attached to the roof, and understand this is probably a three-story mansion, the icicle ended up breaking. And it, the seam of the hot tub caused it to fall off, and it slipped down, and the blunt end of it caught her on the back of her head. She had a severe concussion. It fractured her skull, and she had a bit of whiplash from the weight of it and the force of it hitting her right at the back of her head. She couldn't handle to look at a computer anymore from the concussion because of how bad the concussion was, including the fracture. It caused a little bit of brain damage, and she wasn't able to do her job anymore running the computer even after time had gone on, so she had to move on. And the boss felt terrible because there's no workers' comp that could cover her. It didn't happen at work. She had no personal coverage, and she knew that she was not going to be able to maintain herself. So she found the only work she could do was working in a dimly lit store part-time. She couldn't handle long hours anymore. And over the year that had passed since I had met her, she had to move back in with her family. She separated from her fiancé because she couldn't even remember some of the details and things. It just caused complications in the relationship. I know Betty can testify to what happens when you have a severe post-concussion syndrome. And as time went on, she just realized that her entire life had fallen apart because of a simple accident when she was having an amazing time with her friends. And she looked at me and she told me bluntly, she doesn't know if she's ever going to be able to be independent again. when somebody goes through something like that, it doesn't have to be something dangerous in your job. Life throws obstacles your way. And if you went through something like Christine, how would you feel? So I'll throw it back to you.
Well, thanks, Jack. And that is such a powerful story. I mean, it's not job related. It's more of a, it could happen to anyone sitting in the hot tub, but ice can fall off, and you don't have to be in a hot tub for a big chunk of ice to fall off and hit you in the head and cause that kind of injury. But I like how you laid the ground. A young woman, you talked to her on the job site, and she didn't think it was be important to her. Then you described the incident, sitting there in the hot tub. It could have been just walking by, but a chunk of ice came off the roof and hit her in the head. You know, you painted the picture. It fractured her skull and caused brain injury. And then the follow-up of the story, how it affected her. She had to move in with her family. She's perhaps going to be affected for the rest of her life, and then transferring the emotion at the end is so powerful. Logic makes sense, but emotion makes the sale. And that's it's one thing I can stress is for new people, taking the time to organize those stories in your mind. What I did is when I ran into a story in the field or I talked to somebody that had a great emotional story, I wrote them down in point form. I put them down in point form so I could organize those stories in my mind so that when I shared a third party story, when I shared that testimonial with the prospect, that it made sense, that I could lay the groundwork, I could explain the incident, the follow up, and transfer that emotion to make the most of it. We talk about very often the elevator story, and some people think they can get away with telling a quick little emotional story, but taking the time to tell those third-party stories organized in your mind so that you can use that tool properly, that's one of the most important things we can do. Logic makes sense, emotion makes the sale. So if you want to really change your business, and it tremendously changed my business when I decided to become very, very good at telling emotional stories. So I'm going to go to Sylvia. Sylvia, I'd like you to share an emotional story. And again, maybe you could break it down after you tell the story and how you can hear the glass break and smell the blood.
I'll do my best. I certainly, when Jack was telling his story, I could feel that when the sharp end of an icicle going, like hitting you in the head. That's definitely an ow moment. And that is the thing about our stories, is that if you take your time and do it properly, you want to see and you will see that what a term we call the whiskey face, or they winch and they cringe. Or they make a comment, and you know that you've affected them emotionally. The other thing, so the story I'm going to tell is in your sales manual, so certainly important to re-listen to the recording. But if somebody's looking for some stories today, and you hear this story, and you can go to your manual and you can learn it. And I'm also going to say that remember when we're using our story and our logic. And we're doing that typically, other than your emotional story before your trial close, you're responding to an objection, and very quickly you have to think in your mind, what is this objection? Is it no need, no money, no confidence, or no rush? So the story I'm going to tell, I would say, would respond certainly well to no need and potentially no rush. So a few years ago, one of my coworkers, couple of my coworkers, were up in Thunder Bay, visiting some current clients to do some reviews, and of course looking for some new business. And John kept going by this place that had a sign that said Danex Construction. But every time he drove by, it didn't really look like anybody was around. And one evening, he was out late, so it was dark, and he saw some lights in the shop. So I thought he'd go say hi, introduce himself, see what's going on with the shop and Danex Construction. And there were lights in the bay doors of the shop, so the person in the shop could see that saw John's truck lights come up. So he met John at the door. And when Dan opened the door and John introduced himself, Dan opened the door, and he was on a little scooter, and his leg was in a cast. So John introduced himself, just like I walked into your business and introduced myself. And the guy says, well, you know, as you can see, you can't really do much for me today, but I do have a good story, so why don't you come on in and I'll tell you what happened to me. He said, because I've seen you guys many times over the years, people have approached me on job sites talking about the great disability for self-employed. But I always said to all of them, no, I'm good. I've got coverage. I don't need any. Thanks so much. Go talk to somebody else. And he said, and I never really paid attention, never really listened. I just said, I'm good. So he, and when John met this gentleman, it was in January, and he said, a year ago, I was walking from my house to my shop, and I did not realize it, but there was a little wee patch of ice that was covered in snow, and as I'm trucking across the lot heading to my shop, I hit that piece of ice, and when I hit it and I slipped, I landed on my butt, and I landed so hard that Dan had herniated 3 discs in his back. Now, I don't know if you've ever had any back pain before, but when you have a herniated disc, it's pretty painful. If you have 3 herniated discs, it's extremely painful because everything's attached to your back, and every time you move, it hurts. So Dan said, he'd been waiting and still had more time to wait to have some surgery. So he said, so, you know, when I fell, of course, I called my insurance company and said, I need to make a claim. I hurt myself. I'm going to be off for at least a year, maybe longer, and I need to put in a claim. So they said, okay, and then they called Dan back, and they said, I'm sorry, Dan, but you don't have any disability insurance. Well, I'm sure I have some. I was talking to a lady a couple of years ago, and she saved me some money, but I'm sure I have some. And so when they looked in the records, and of course that lady wasn't with the company anymore, what she had done in saving him some money was she canceled his disability insurance and increased his liability insurance. So had somebody else slipped on that ice, they'd be well covered. But being in his own on his own yard, and it's his own fault, no coverage. So he said to John, you know, I've been waiting a year. It's going to be a year and a half before I get surgery. And so he still had another 6 months to wait. And I don't know how long it'll take me to recover from that. And if it hadn't been for my wife, the fact that my wife is a teacher, I don't think we'd have our house anymore. And his big shop had been turned into a big man cave, and he had a big, large screen TV on the one far wall. And he pointed over to the side wall, and he said to John, you see that hole there where there used to be something? That was my snowmobile. And right behind it, there's another hole, and that was my motorcycle. I had to sell these things so that I could help make my wife make ends meet. Now, the broken leg, he says, I was up on a satellite trying to adjust the satellite to watch my TV, and I fell off the ladder and broke my leg while he's laid up with the bad back. And he said, you know, before I fell that morning when I was walking across the lot, I had 3 crews working hard. I was well known in the community. I did a lot of business with people. Now I'm down to a couple of guys that are just finishing off a couple of jobs. Nobody really wants to do business with the company because I'm not working, and people look at me like I'm the business. And had I had a program like you guys do provide, because I've heard a little bit about it and I know people that have collected on it, my life would look very different than it is today. So, you know, can you imagine what if you were, you know, if that happened to you and you slipped and fell and you had to wait a year and a half for surgery. In these days, you might be waiting 2 years for surgery. How would you pay all your bills if you couldn't work for a couple of years? You truly can see how important a program is when you, like this is, when you do need to use a program. So did you want to take care of that deposit with a credit card, a check, cash? What works best for you? Back to you. You want me to break it down. So, first part is in the gift, laying the groundwork. So I talked about where Dan is and some of his details. And if you can take a geographical location, like a lot of us certainly in Ontario will say, do you know where Dorking is when we do the Howard Brubaker story? And part of that, the whole thing is when you're starting to tell your story and laying the groundwork, you're pulling them into the idea of a story and getting their mind away from insurance. So when you say to somebody, you know, do you know where London is? Or do you know where Stratford is? Or do you know where, if you're, you know, in Nova Scotia, do you know where Digby, I don't even know the places. But when you do that, in their mind, they're picturing a map, and you've taken them totally out of the idea of buying insurance and into the story, and you're setting that up. And so you want to share information that might relate a lot to that person. With the Danek story, a lot of times we meet somebody that says, you know, I don't need coverage. I've got, you know, I've got employees. They'll keep the company running. And the reality is, for many small companies, the owner, like Dan, is the engine of the business, and that's who the community thinks they're dealing with, is Dan, and Dan's going to get the right guys and take care of everything. So, and your logic prior to that, you know, if somebody says to you, I've already got coverage, or I've got employees, I understand how you feel. A lot of people have felt that way, but what they found is that after being off a long period of time, the employees are tired of doing the boss's job, and they either start their own business or they go out and get something else. Like, for example, a few years ago, and then you would roll into the story. So your logic has to match and mirror and answer the question to their objection, and then you follow it with that story. Once you get into the incident, you know, it's early in the morning, so maybe you didn't feel like when he slipped and landed on his butt so hard that he herniated 3 discs. But you want to make sure that there's the impact of what that's like, and so that they can kind of wince and feel that feeling. What was the follow-up? How did it end up for Dan? He ended up selling his motorcycle, his snowmobile, and, you know, if his wife left him, he probably wouldn't have a house, because she became the main income earner for the family. And then transferring that emotion. Making them think, what would you do if you couldn't work for 3 years? And wait. And give them time. This is the biggest thing, as John said, you don't want to rush through it. You want to take time so that they can feel the glass break and smell the blood, but also for them to actually think to themselves, what would I do if I couldn't work for 3 years? And then you go right back in and assume that that has answered their objection, and they're going to give you the next piece of information on your application, or they're going to give you that deposit or that banking information or whatever it is, your next move. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Sylvia. That's such a powerful story, but, you know, the way you explained it, you know, that you everything you broke down in that story, it was a perfect seasonal story. And logic makes sense, emotion makes the sale, and that's so critical. I want to go to Ruth. Ruth, you're in your 8th year in this business, and worked a lot of winters, and you've run into a lot of different situations. Can you share a third party story?
Well, Sylvia told my Danek story, so I don't have any left now. I was going to tell one story, and I think I'm going to be really brave and just tell a different story. And it's not a story anybody's ever heard before. Maybe I shouldn't. Anyway. Go back, 1993, 1994, a long time ago. Chelsea was just little. And anybody who doesn't know, Chelsea's 34 years old. It's my daughter. What happened was, I was married, and we fought and fought and fought and fought and fought. And speaking of 8 years, which is what triggered it off, I was 8 years married, and I was tired of all the fighting, and we decided to separate. So I got a house, around the corner so that, you know, we could co-parent and do those kinds of things. And, of course, there was a lot of, during that period of time when we were co-parenting, my ex-husband now had quit his job and went to go do something completely different just because he was doing a change. So he had quit his job. He had his house. I had my house. It's a struggle for young parents to make ends meet as it is. It was not an easy time to be out on my own with 2 little kids and having this whole situation. And a few months go by, and we kind of started to see if we should maybe get back together and try again. And so because the houses were close in proximity, at the end of a night, an evening, as I put the kids to bed, he walked up to spend an evening with me. And on the way home, walking home that night, he slipped on the ice on the sidewalk. And up he went, and down came, he came. And he came on top of his leg, his own leg, and his foot was backwards. And he did a severe break in his lower part of his leg and his upper part of his leg. And boom, here he was. And so I hear about it the next day because he calls and says, I'm in the hospital, I've had my leg broken, blah, 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 blah. Well, he's in a brand new job and got no benefits because he's just changed companies. And so, you know, the doctors did a big operation on his leg and they told him he was going to be off 6, 7, 8 months. And boy, I tell you, that wasn't an easy time. And so he was off during that period of time. And he had a mortgage payment to make, and he had food to eat, and he couldn't go shopping. And so we were kind of not with a whole lot of family, so being the kind person that I am, I did a lot of the filling in for those areas and trying to help in whatever way I could, but he went through his savings, and he had mortgage payments to make. And I helped him to try to find out if, you know, because there was something. The bank said, oh, no, we can't lend you any money. We can't change the mortgage. I'm sorry about your situation. He ended up having to go to the food bank. And it was, he had to go and get social assistance because I didn't want to carry all of this. And those people, they wouldn't give him any money because he owned a house. And they said, you go sell your house. And what a situation it was. And so anyway, as a result of all of those things, there was complications in his leg. And they said that he might never, ever recover from his leg because it wasn't responding. And he had to go for special physiotherapy, and that was expensive and blah, blah, blah. And guess what happened? We got back together again for another 7 long years. And you can imagine the difference having a program for $2,000 or $3,000 a month coming in, what it made in that terrible situation. And, you know, I'm not sorry for anything that happened. We went back and we did our best and it still didn't work out. And we've moved on to have, certainly me on my part, a happy, fulfilling life. And him too. But that was 20 years ago. But instead, the situations that were put at hand for us almost made it impossible for us to do anything but. You know, it's not nice when Jerry talks about the edge of your bed being the edge of your world, but I certainly experienced it during that period of time. It was not an easy thing to go through. And so if you can see anything like that ever happening in your life, before we go any further, we need to find out if you can qualify for a program like this. So that's not a third-party story. It is a first-party story, and it is important to not tell too many first-party stories because the whole idea of a testimonial really is to stop them looking at you as the salesperson and to look at real-life situations of real-life people. But it's okay if that story is a real-life story for you. So something that you said, and I want to just clarify, not correct, because, you know, you tell a winter story in the winter, and it doesn't make as much sense to tell a summer story in the winter, but it does make some sense to tell a summer story if you don't have a winter story. But at the same time, you might have a repertoire of 3, 4, 5 winter stories now. And the best thing you can do is listen to this phone call and make some point forms about some of these stories that you are hearing so that you can own them and you can make them for yourself. So on that note, I'll pass it back to you.
Well, thank you, Ruth. And a great personal story. I mean, logic makes sense. Emotion makes a sale. And that was a, you know, even though it was a personal story, it really it really covered all, it covered the groundwork, the incident, the follow-up, and transferring that emotion. And it's the sign of somebody who is very successful in the business has taken the time to learn these stories, to be fast on your feet, because very often we're sticking with the prospect for five no's. And you know, the first thing we're doing is doing a reverse. And part of a reverse is an emotional story and assuming the sale. And then when we're overturning, feel, felt, found, and again, you go right to an emotional story and assume into the sale. So using the proper tools in our kit, our tools are communication, and that's part of being able to close those sales. So I'd like Betty. Betty, you've been very, very hardworking in our business for a number of years, and you see a lot of things in your travels. Are you there, Betty? I see your picture, but I don't see. We might have lost Betty. I don't. Let me just go to Eileen for a minute. Eileen, I'm not going to ask you to share. Oh, there you are, Betty. I see you're on now. I can't.
Good morning, John.
Oh, there you are. Okay, maybe you could share a third-party story with us, Betty.
Oh, sure, John. So I've talked to a young man over the last couple of years with regard to a program. His first name is Tyler. And he, hardworking young man, helps on the dairy farm, goes into woodlots, makes garden sheds, that type of thing, always really, really busy. And I did a presentation with him, and he definitely seen the importance of our program, but obviously having a truck payment and everything, it just wasn't feasible for him at that time. And I think it was a year ago last fall, Sylvia and I had actually stopped in at the father's dairy farm, and I didn't realize it was that farm. And I recognized Tyler right away, and he knew me, and he shook my hand, and how you doing? And he says, I was just thinking about you. And I said, oh, are we ready to talk? And he said, no, not quite yet, but hopefully soon. And then I heard about, so I had booked an appointment with his father, and it was supposed to be Christmas, and we had a crazy snowstorm, and so that didn't happen. So January, we were going to meet and had an appointment booked, and no one was home when I went there. And I messaged him and said, hey, not sure if something came up. And he said, two of my kids are in the hospital. They had a serious car accident. So when I found out about the car accident, Tyler had actually been driving his 14-year-old sister. They were in the pickup, and the road conditions weren't great, and someone ran a stop sign, and he rolled multiple times in a ditch, and had some, and as well his, so he ended up with having a fractured neck, a broken back. He had internal injuries. He had to have part of his bowel removed. His sister ended up with, 14 years old, had a broken back, and as well had internal injuries and had to have surgery. My heart broke when I heard about Tyler's accident, because I knew I could have helped him if the timing would have been right. And unfortunately, Tyler went through months of doing recovery, and he's finally just getting back going. But the community rallied around him, and they did a GoFundMe page for him, and they did auction and everything just to try and help this young man being able to continue. And knowing how close it was to me, I felt guilty knowing, and my husband was like, you did everything you could. And now in talking to Tyler, he's like, I know that you definitely were there for me, and I wish things would have been different at that time. But he's got lifetime injuries that he's never going to totally recover from, and he definitely knows that now he won't qualify for our program. And I'll put it back to you, John.
Well, thanks, Betty. That's a powerful story. And again, it's something you ran into in the field, somebody who put it off and put it off, and then when something happens, it's too late. You can't, like Jerry says, you know, if the cemeteries are full of first-timers, well, nobody plans on getting into a situation where they have an extensive disability that can affect them for years. But I'd like to hear Eileen's impression of what we've been talking about today. I don't need a story from you, Eileen. I just like you to maybe expand a little bit on your interpretation of what we're talking about today. Are you there, Eileen? No? I guess not. So we're going to go to Mr. Brink. Mr. Brink, can you perhaps share a story with us? And then we'll just your impression of how important this is in our business, and then we'll pass it back to Greg.
Sure, John. Can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
I'm going to share one that I just got told like within the last 2 weeks. We often come across people. We're in Canada. We come across people who are hockey families, and you know, it's one of the things that we pick up on when you see the photographs and the team photographs in the doorway and all these kinds of things. And you know, coming from that sort of background, it is a common thread that you know that I have with many, many prospects. And I met a gentleman about, he's a little younger than myself. He's about 39 37 38, something like that. His name is Logan Mercer, a few weeks back, and we got to talking. I met him at his house. He was on lunch, and he's a electrician. And when I started talking to him, I said, okay, you know, I noticed you're here. It must be a vacation day if you're at home on a Tuesday kind of thing. And he said, well, as a matter of fact. And then he lifted up his pant leg, and he had a cast all around his right leg, his right knee. And he said, I've got one for you. He said, I do a little bit of the team's management, and I'm always running around. I got the two boys there. And, you know, when we came home the other day, I usually have the chores set out pretty good for the boys so they can get it, you know, get all the chores done so that when I get home from work, we can take off right away to the rink. And I said, I know all about that. And he said, I came home the other day, and it was, I don't know, about 4:30 in the afternoon, and I walked through the front door, and I could just tell stuff wasn't done. And I was a little bit heated. It was freezing cold in the house. The dishes were all over the table, and I know that we're just basically scooping food into our guts and then hitting the road. And he said, so I threw something in the microwave, and then I ran downstairs because I had to get a fire in the wood stove before my wife got home. And so I went into the back, and he kind of pointed how it was a split entry house. So you had to go, you know, down two sets of stairs and then through to the back door. And then you kind of swung right or left, and you went into the workshop. And in the workshop, you had all the, you know, the hockey gear. That's where the boys keep their hockey gear. And he had some shelves with some tools in there. And at the back of the workshop is where he kept all the firewood, all the cordwood that was back there. So he grabbed a couple armloads or, you know, full of wood, and he was holding it out in front of him with his arms under the wood, and as he turned and took a step and stepped over one of the boys' hockey bags, well, his foot hooked into the loop on one of the boys' hockey bags, and as he stepped over top of it, you can imagine getting your foot snared up in a strap of a hockey bag. It caught, and because the door was just in front of him, he fell directly forward. Well, when he fell directly forward, he was falling almost out through the doorway into the hallway, and his knee that was caught fell right directly where the concrete ended, and then there was a little one-inch riser, and tile started for the hallway that went to the front of the house. Well, right on this ledge, it was an unfinished workshop, right on this ledge, cut clear through his blue jeans, and severed his patella. This is this little cartilage in the front of your kneecap. And to make things worse, being an electrician, he had 10, 12 pieces of logs of wood in his hand that had no choice but to come down straight as he collapsed forward, came straight down on his hands. And it actually fractured two of the fingers in his right hand. And so he screamed, and one of the boys had to, you know, come running. And within, you know, 2 minutes, he realized that this was going to be worse than what he had thought it was going to be. So he hopped in the vehicle with his 17-year-old boy, and they drove down to the emergency room. And he got rushed right in. This was 22 stitches later, and two different layers, like stitches on the inside of his knee, stitches on the outside of his knee, just to fix, to keep the laceration together. But his patella is torn, it's fractured, and this required surgery. So he was sort of bumped to the front of the line, and Logan told me that it wasn't that bad. He was about a month and a half getting in to the actual knee surgery. They had a bit of an emergency surgery on the spot, but he had to have a full-blown knee surgery to repair this. And it was about 5-6 weeks, he said, waiting in time in for that, which was obviously just enough time to have his hands heal up. And this was all because one of the boys left the hockey gear in the doorway of the workshop, and I was in a rush, and I thought to myself as he's telling me this story, it's like, this is just one of these things when you're trying to be everybody for everyone. This is one of these things that you can't really prevent. The guys had put that hockey gear there 100,000 times. And, you know, it was not really a problem until it was a problem. And what's unfortunate is that this is a guy who's, you know, he's the main breadwinner in the family. He's the one that's responsible for a lot of the driving around. He's a manager on the touch team. He's doing everything he can to be everywhere for everyone. And one lapse in judgment and one rush, one day trying to get to practice, and 4 months of your life is lost. 4 months of your contributions to the family, 4 months of your momentum, 4 months of, you know, padding your savings account or whatever have you, set him back, you know, monetarily, it set him back psychologically, it frustrated him because of how he acted to his boys just following all this. And so when you go through something like this, you realize how quick it can happen. And I know it's unfortunate, and it's not nice to put yourself in that situation, but this kind of thing can happen to anybody. And if it happened to you, how would you feel? So, John, that's one that that I just got there literally a week and a half ago from a gentleman who was, you know, very, very understanding of our situation. Under the current circumstances, we're not able to work with them until he gets, you know, back to himself. But this guy's he's already missed about 4 months, and he has another 2-3 weeks recovering from this surgery. And so, you know, these stories, more than anything, they allow us to stay on the same side as our prospects. They allow us to cycle with our prospects without being perceived as being pushy, without being perceived as being on the other side. It's not a tit-for-tat, a push and a pull. It's a we're both on the same side. And that is a fundamental difference in the sales process from most sales. We can understand virtually everybody's perspective. We can agree. And we have the solution to that problem. And so if we're looking for ways to connect with our prospects, we're looking for ways to hang in. That's the thing, is cycling with our clients. Jerry has the stats of how many no's on average we go through. And when we do go through those no's, what it leads to. And it's a proportional, I forget the exact stats, but he'll tell you here, I'm sure, in a moment. when you stay through four or five no's and you do it eloquently, when you maintain being on their side and you agree with them and you cycle with our clients, we end up building a common thread. We end up building a common understanding. And that allows us to be perceived as being an ambassador for the small business community rather than a pushy salesman. And that's fundamental when we're dealing with the best product on the market. We are blessed with the ability to have a cause. And that, if that's what drives us, then we're interpreted differently than a regular salesperson. So those are my thoughts. I'll bump it back to you, John. Hope that helps.
Well, thanks, Adam. And two things before we go to Greg. One is, get permission from the people you're talking to use their story. Now, it's really critical to get permission to use somebody's name or to get their stories. And I know Jerry just popped right up here. So, Jerry, I'd like your comments before we go to Greg.
Well, I was listening intently, and it's a powerful, powerful meeting. But ladies and gentlemen, especially some of us new members of the team, more importantly, you have to practice. And you do that by making five presentations a day. At the beginning, you won't close one out of three, which is our international average and has been since 1971. You'll close maybe one out of five, one out of six. So how do you know, question one, when to give up on your prospect? It's very simple. When he or she decides that they're no longer going to stay and listen to your powerful stories and your emotion, your logic emotion, and your closing, then they just say, thank you very much, but I'm not interested or I can't go any further, and it's over. So the average person, and again, we're all average men and women, we become excellent by practice. So the whole idea is stick with your prospect for as long as he or she is sticking with you, as long as you're closing, logic, emotion, and close. Believe deeply in the service. The service is exactly as you think it is. It's that good. And you're doing these people a tremendous service. It's not a luxury item. We're not selling a color TV. We're not selling something that, a boat. This is something that they have to give them huge peace of mind when they don't need it and cash money when they do. And so stick with your prospect. They're interested if they're sitting there and listening or standing there and listening. And you just have to push that hot button, which is telling the third party story. So give yourself some time. Get in five presentations in a day. You may write none. That's okay. You got a great deal of practice. Then little by little, you write one. Then after, in the five. And then sometimes you'll write two in the five. And at the end of the month, you'll have a terrific month, as long as you get in your five. If you do, if you don't get in 20 a week, there isn't really much I can say. They're just, because it doesn't work. It's just like wanting to play hockey, but you don't want to go to the practice, or wanting to play football, and you don't go to practice. Professionalism is being the best you can be while striving to be the best you can be. And your best gets better as you continue to strive. And if you don't strive, you level off. And that's as far as you're going to go. I say that with love and respect. You're not going any further. You will be what you are today unless you're willing to stretch out and do the mental exercises, get involved with your profession, and focus in on trying to be of great service to people and not take rejections personally. Don't take any rejections personally. It's all professional. Those are my words. Those are my thoughts. And as a new kid on the block, which I've only started, I think it's 6 decades now I've been here, not 60 years, 62 years. Now, that's 6 decades, plus two. I've loved every minute of it because I knew then as I know today, I knew then as I know today what you're doing, what I did, and what I did for so many years in the field was be of great service to humanity, made a difference in so many people's lives, so many people's lives. You do the same and you become very successful, very happy, very wealthy. You build legacy. And if you'd like, you can become a partner with us in the business. Greg, I guess I'm supposed to say, it's all yours, Mr.
Well, you know, Jerry, you did a great job of echoing what I was going to stress. And I like the fact that you said about doing your five a day, because called perfect practice. Just practice, and there's no better way to practice than doing five a day. If you do five a day, you just got to get better. And I will tell you, when I started, I logically could tell a story. It's when you emotionally connect. And I've talked about this with an incredible agent that's learning his craft right now. And I said, you know, there's, when you look at people that sing, for an example, there are certain people that can sing with accurate tones and they got the right words, they sing. But then there's people that can sing where you feel the words. You feel the, they might not even be the best singer, but they have this way of transferring the emotion of the words that they're singing. And our presentation is the same. You don't have to be the best storyteller because you memorize the story. It's how you transfer that emotion of that story. You know, when someone, I always say, when someone's laughing, we all laughed before. I'm sure we all cried before. We all been angry before. You don't need to know personally what creates someone to be happy or sad or crying because we all experienced it. When we tell an emotional story, you don't need to know the person personally before you're able to transfer that emotion. Pain is pain. Consequences are consequences. When you tell the story, tell it like this person potentially could seriously get hurt tomorrow. How would you tell the story? This is your only opportunity that you can make such an impact in this person to make a life-altering decision about the value of protecting their family. So all you can do is just give your personal best every time. That's all we ask you for. Whatever your best is today, just give your personal best and do it 5 times a day. I promise you'll get your fair share of the business. We promise you that. On that note, let's all have a great day. Bye for now.
Goodbye.